Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride.
If you're an American and you are watching football or soccer, as we like to call it, big night for USA.
USA! USA! USA!
And you were out, and I was going to, and I was just so overheated from being outside in the afternoon, I just watched it at home. But you were like in the midst of a massive party.
I was at Novad on Brady Street.
They really did it up.
Everything I wanted it to be as far as an opportunity to watch it in a group setting, a bunch of people, outdoor. It was hot. It was sweaty. It was beer flying at some points when we scored goals. It was very fun. And so shout out to Nomad as far as all the, they put a lot of effort into what they're doing over there. I think Zocalo, there's a couple different places where you can watch outside in big group settings with big screens like that.
Yeah, shout out to the South Side, Moran's Pub, doing a big thing for every game, too. It's a celebration. We're going to sort of explore that because it's more than just a soccer or football game.
It was very fun. I mean, first, just the game itself. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I'm going to soccer aficionado.
Yeah, right.
But it was very fun to watch. The fact that there was if you were not watching, there was a red card, which I think people don't always understand.
Not right either.
No one agrees that this should have been a red card. But it's not just you get kicked out of the game. Is that now one
next
of our
game.
Best players and our best scorers is out for the next game, too. So now that we won, we're playing Belgium. So the fact that we were, and so you played down a man for the rest of the game. So it was 11-10 after he got his red card. And yet we still scored another goal on a free kick.
Yeah.
That was just gorgeous as far as how it flew through the wall of defenders and past the goalie.
That whole thing's magic.
And he had just gotten his foot stepped on. He had to go change his cleat because someone had stepped on his foot and his foot, the shoe broke, and they had a picture of his bleeding foot. And then he went back out and scored that goal. And so if you can seek out at all today, footage of celebrations from all over. I put it on my Instagram story if anyone follows me, but as far as clips of people at watch parties all across the country watching the game and celebrating, and I think it's set to, like, the music behind it is Freebird, which will get you going.
I sort of said this yesterday, not in as grand fashion as a lot of other commentators have said it, but one, it's here in the United States. We're hosting the World Cup. And two, we have a men's team that's all of a sudden competitive. This is the first time they've advanced to the 16, Sweet 16, and I know that's a basketball term, the Final 16 group, in 24 years.
24 years? I mean, we weren't even in it in 2018.
No. I guess, I don't follow soccer as much as most people, but is the home field that, is it, does it matter to this team?
Well, considering Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. are all still in it and still all moving on to the round of 16, I think it doesn't. Certainly doesn't hurt.
No. So maybe that's some of the magic here.
Probably. And I think, I feel like this is where, I feel like I'm repeating myself, but I'm going to do it again anyways, as far as I am convinced that more than anything leading up to this weekend in America 250, having us be one of the World Cup hosts is one of the best things we could do to celebrate, because we're seeing ourselves through the lens of tourists and how much they're appreciating the mundane about America. We're getting to cheer for our team in a way that, you know, when we're used to, like, maybe just the Olympics being an opportunity to have your patriotism and being proud of being from this country and all rooting for one team together. And I don't know, like, there's something magical about this. Despite all of the other polling that says people aren't excited about America 250.
It's a perfect example of what I've been trying to tell people. It's a celebration of the people and the country, not the Washington, D.C. BS. That's one of the biggest takeaways. But at the same time, to your point, it represents something for us. We can be passionate about our country and celebrate this stuff. And there's a great representative, Abby Wambach. You have a great clip from her.
So I thought
she's won some World Cups.
Yeah, so she's won she's won one World Cup and I think two gold medals as an Olympian. You know, one of the best all-time, I think she's the second for either gender, second all-time international goal scorer for men and women. So, like, has some credentials when it comes to soccer. So on her Instagram this morning, she put out this video. We truncated it a little bit, but Jazz, let's play that.
You are giving us the hope that this country freaking needs right now. You are bringing us together, giving us a common theme, a common thing that we can all cheer for. So the more you keep winning, the more you bring us together. Let's f-ing go, boys. Keep going. I believe, because why not us? Why not us?
I love the energy.
Get her
passion
in the locker room.
You know what? It might not be a bad idea for the men's coach to bring some of those women who have been very successful, the different teams they've had, the four World Cup champions, bring them in and talk to this team. And there's another interesting point that I want to get to after the break. You did some homework on the constitution of this team.
Yeah.
Who these men are.
And it's very topical given the Supreme Court ruling from earlier in this week.
And how they got here and why they're playing for the U.S. team, and a little bit of something that certainly plays into what the theme of this show is and the politics of America as we celebrate 250. She's Chris and I'm Steve. Point taken. Celebrating the big win, 2-0 America over Bosnia-Herzegovina. Exciting game. People had so much fun with it. And if you're a social media person, just go and look at some of these videos and stuff. Across the country, even across the world, people celebrating. It is the world's sports. As much as we talk about, you know, world champs in basketball or American football, this is the biggest thing, I think, in the world. And every country gets fired up. They cheer for their men and women when the Women's World Cup is going on. And for us, hosting it this year, it's a special time in our country. But you did some great homework looking at the makeup of this team.
So there are, now I lost it at the minute, but I think there's at least 8 members on the team who have dual citizenship.
How about that?
And there is specifically one of our stars, Balogun, who got the red card yesterday. He is literally only here because of birthright citizenship.
Say that again.
So
He's only here.
So basically, he was born in Brooklyn while his parents were visiting the U.S.
Oh.
His Nigerian parents were traveling through New York when his mother, who was heavily pregnant, was prevented from boarding a flight back to England. Weeks later, the soccer star was born in New York, and his family then returned to England. There's other if you look at the makeup of this team, I think about half the team, their parents are immigrants. And that's not just a U.S. story. I remember when France won in 2018, I think Trevor Noah, when he was still hosting The Daily Show, and he got some pushback from the French. But the thing is, you think about French colonialism and how many different islands and nations that were under French rule and that allowed people who were born in other countries to play for France. And you look up the makeup of the French team then, and it's a bunch of white French guys, right? And so it's the same thing here, as far as it's a fluidity, as far as being world citizens, of having parents who are from different countries and how they end up in a different country. And like, there's a lot of blending in the World Cup teams, as far as people having different relationships to more than one country that allows them to play for different countries, including a lot of the guys on the U.S. team right now who could be playing for someone else but are choosing to play for the U.S. and get to play for the U.S. But a lot of it is because of immigration.
And it's such a stark reality for some people to face. And I heard saw a little social media commentary about, I can't cheer for these guys. Like, seriously? Why? Because of the politics of it? That's stupid. And the president has been pretty quiet about the performance of this team so far. Now, I hope he does the right thing and cheers them on in their next match, because I think that's important for the President of the United States when we're hosting the World Cup. And let's give him credit. He did help bring that World Cup here. He was part of the welcoming committee to make this all possible. So you give him credit for that. But this is a story beyond the political filter of the reality of the world we live in and the country that we celebrate America's 250 this weekend. This is real life. It's not like, and I'm a white guy, it's not me, it's where I came from, which is two separate countries on this planet, and you probably have a similar background, as do most people. We are all immigrants for the most part, except for a very small group of people who are indigenous to this country.
Who weren't considered citizens for a very long time.
So don't try to put like a recency bias on and say, well, I don't like them anymore. I don't like what they're doing in our country. This is the story of our country. You have to make it work. That's the power of it. And for at least a moment last night, these individuals who have all these unique stories from different places around the world are celebrating that diversity, are celebrating the fact that whatever you think about diversity, they came together and played as a team.
Because I'm pretty sure Malik, the guy who scored the second goal, he's half German.
Yeah. This is the amazing thing about it. It's not hard, people. Celebrate this. There's no... And somebody was just saying he's going to turn us off. Because we're celebrating the World Cup win, you're going to turn us off? Make smarter choices to the 414. Make smarter choices. Listen better. Be smarter. Go find some hate radio if you want to go do that. This is not that. This is a celebration of something we should all celebrate as we're going into America 250. And again, what makes this cool, we're going to do a whole 40-minute podcast with Bill and Joe after the show today with a special edition of the podcast for America 250. This is what I've been talking about. It's celebrate the good things. Celebrate the coming together and stop trying to split us apart. That's dangerous. It does incite violence and makes us hate each other and inspires people to do bad things. So let's, for this moment, enjoy it and celebrate it. How is that hard work for anybody? Apparently the texter, it's too hard for him. He can't deal with it, the success. Shut up, texter. But keep listening. Apparently you're a listener. Good for you. Quick break. Great song, old song. Celebrating America's 250, and I teased it before, but we're literally going to go from this studio to the new podcast studio, Pella Windows of Doors of Wisconsin podcast studio upstairs, and record with Bill and Joe, because they're going to be off tomorrow like we are. Sort of a review of America 250, where we've been, where we're going next 50 years, what to expect, some interesting details about where all of us sort of fall on all of these things. And I think, as somebody who's proud of the country, I still think it's the greatest country on the planet, and there's obviously people that will poke holes in that theory, but yeah, American pride, I guess. And I'm somebody who wasn't born on the continent. I was born in Wiltshire, England, basically. It's a very small area away from London. But I still love this country. Doesn't mean I hate England or I hate any country, really, because they're ultimately, you told a story last week, when people come here to watch the U.S. World Cup, they love us. They love our traditions. They love the cool stuff. They love ranch dressing, apparently. That's a celebration of America.
Ranch is about to be the biggest export.
Oh, my God. Was it Hidden Valley Ranch? Man, they're going to make some serious scratch this year based on just the foreign sales. You can get yourself tied up in knots over politics. And you know that I've talked about politics for almost 10 years on this station. I get it. I understand the points of view. Everyone's different. I understand. I think a lot of it, and I've said this in many public events that I've spoken at, I'm someone that gets paid to talk about politics, and I think politics is stupid. And I freely admit that. So much of it is wrapped up in political jargon and nonsense and cheerleading and demonizing people. And who says that has to be the way we practice politics? I get the nation's history. We've had many, many periods of that. And it is a great story. The fact that our founders, they weren't settled on anything. They did the best they could, knowing that there's going to be issues along the way. And we certainly have delivered on that, from slavery to civil rights to, you know, inequities. It's an imperfect country.
I mean, think about the hubris and ego of the men who were in those rooms trying to figure this out, as far as our founding fathers.
Philadelphia.
And actually, speaking of that, it's something that's not getting as much press today, but there is a meeting in Philadelphia today. Representative Brendan Boyle is taking Congress back to Philadelphia today. And so it's going to be, so obviously July 4th usually gets most of the fanfare, but today, July 2nd, is actually when the Second Continental Congress voted to declare independence from Great Britain. And so I don't know how many, it's not an official meeting, because I think Congress is on break right now anyways, but there's a whole, the last time they met in Congress met in Independence Hall was 1987.
Yeah.
And this is not getting that much press, but there is a group of Congress men and women right now who are in Philadelphia to commemorate today ahead of July 4th.
Yeah, so that's the day they voted to declare independence from Great Britain. 2 days later, Congress approved that. So I think that's the magic of this story. July 4th, that's why we celebrate that day. It's the one place in our country that I have not visited yet, Independence Hall in Philadelphia. I've been to Philly, but I haven't visited.
Haven't seen the Liberty Bell?
No.
Really? So that surprises me that that hasn't been higher on your priority list.
Yeah, I've been almost everywhere else. Yeah, so that's on my 2028 summer travel tour list. We're going to probably try to do that on a road trip or of some sort. So, yeah, I mean, there's so many ways to look at this story. Another interesting one that I just picked up real quick. I don't have a ton of time. Maybe we'll get to it after the break. We talked a lot about Doge when Elon Musk was doing all that stuff. And one of the things that Doge impacted was small town celebrations for America's 250. They stripped a lot of that funding. You know where that funding went to? Donald Trump's big arch, some of the other things that he's commissioned. He just took that money from the small towns who wanted to do something special for the 250th. And he's going to use it for his own projects. So think about that in your frame of reference for who
you
are.
You had to end on a down note.
I did. But the good note is, all those local communities are still going to do it in their own special way. And cities like Cudahy and Franklin and Oak Creek and your neighborhood, River West, and all across this great country of ours, people are going to be going to parades. I don't care if it rains or not. I'm still going to be there watching the parade in Cudahy, Wisconsin. I did it as a kid, and I've done it since my parents are there now. I just enjoy the whole thing. And I'm not a huge parade guy, but I love the 4th of July parade. It's special. It's different. It's unique. It's fun.
Ours isn't like a parade.
It's kids, right?
Kids. Yeah. Just kids on their bikes and stuff. Because
they're not spoiled by anything.
There's no, like, politician.
Yet.
There might be. Yeah, there's not. It's not like a float situation.
So what if a kid does his bike up in, like, a Trump thing? Would that be a.
It is River West, Milwaukee. I'm not sure that's.
Yeah, probably not going to be.
I will be very surprised if that is the case.
But if they do, freedom of choice.
Exactly.
You can do whatever you want. I'm not going to nail a kid because he took the time to decorate his bike. All right, lots more to talk about on the first hour of a Thursday edition of The Point Take. We are all celebrating America's 250. We should celebrate. It's a very cool thing. It's a moment when hopefully most of us come together. And you know, look, I was going to read some of the negative text.
Yeah, a lot of positive text too, though.
We did, and I.
But that's typical.
I celebrate
that's every
all
day.
Yeah, I don't get the venom and the anger for soccer or football, and some texter said he doesn't like the fact that there's, you know, foreign players, air quoting foreign. That's just the reality of the sport. It's like the reality of America. We got to stop with this stuff. It's just energy wasted. It's dangerous. It incites violence. It's not productive. And at the end of the day, we end up with I'm actually going to segue into what we're going to do after the show. It fractures us at a time when we need to not do that. And so we're going to sit down. We want to spend some time telling you about it because it's a big event. We don't have Bill and Joe tomorrow because we're all off. Beginning of a long weekend, and I actually will be off Monday as well, and Kristen will handle the show, which she'll do just fine on Monday. It is a podcast that sort of takes the best of Friday, and we're going to do one topic, which is America 250, but in a lot of different ways. And we've kind of all been going back and forth through email or text. How do you want to approach it? What angle? Because it's pretty structured. It's an hour program, which will air over the weekend on Saturday and Sunday.
We'll put it in the newsletter too. So if you want to make sure to listen to it, text extra to 855-616-1620. Make sure you're subscribed to the newsletter.
Yeah, it's going
to
be the main. That's probably all we're going to do for the newsletter because we're all off this weekend. So that'll be the focus. But I really want to talk when we get together with Bill and Joe later and you. My focus is the next 50. But certainly we're going to look back because you did a great thing early on in the process of talking about this. Look at 1826, 1876, 1920. All of those are very unique. Reconstruction and, civil unrest and all the, trust is the big one in 76 because it just came out of the Nixon, all of that. And one or both of us made the point yesterday that doesn't even get like more than 2 days of attention. Like seriously, mm-hmm. Watergate, like you'd get it. You know what you'd get now? Who cares? For most people on that side of the aisle. Oh, who cares? Plus, he can do whatever he wants, right? That kind of argument. So I'm curious what your expectations are for the conversation, where you'd like it to go as we sort of sit down and debate this.
I don't know if there's a debate.
Not debate, just conversation.
I'm interested to see, I don't know, it feels like an opportunity where we're all going to agree more than we usually do.
Yeah. And being positive is not a bad thing.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be a conversation that's going to like be like squishy fish, like squishy emotions. But I don't know. It's one of those times where, in going into this conversation, I wish I was more, I had more historical facts in my back pocket because I think sometimes when we lose sight, I try to always remember that as far as how things feel turbulent right now. And yet in all of these like 50 year markers, things weren't necessarily like great.
No.
Right. And so to not get too bogged down with the details of how things feel in this moment and try to get a wider lens on it to remember and contextualize, like Ken Burns has done a lot this week, not surprising considering how many documentaries he's done on different parts of American history. And like trusting voices like that who know a lot about where we've been. And when he says, like, when asked, are we going to be okay? And he very joyously goes, yes.
Yeah.
You know, in like a very joyful way of like, we're going to be fine because we've been through this before. And also, but you also think about the, as we're talking about the World Cup, think about some of these countries and what they've been through. Think about like the French Revolution and then what happened after the French Revolution and like how many different republics they've been on and like these countries that are way older than us and the transformations they've gone through and the turmoil they've gone through, and they're still there. They're still on the world stage for the World Cup. And I think the hyperbole sometimes around, oh, we're a nation in decline or we're gonna at the precipice of another civil war is maybe more exaggerated or dramatic. And not to like downplay people's feelings, but I think knowing more about history and what we've persevered through, not that people didn't get hurt and killed along the way, and it shouldn't be taken seriously, but as far as like you keep putting one foot in front of the other as a country, and I think we will.
Yeah, I sent it to you guys this morning. I love playing around with ChatGPT. I don't always use a lot of the stuff it gives me, but I said define those 50 year increments with a question. And going back to 1826, could the nation stay united, right? That was the big question. 1876, promises made after the Civil War, could we fulfill those? 1926, incredible inequities and obviously, you know, the crash.
3 years away from the Great Depression.
And then this is the interesting one for me, and I'm going to ask you guys later in the podcast. So the 76 question is the same question I'm asking today. Can Americans regain confidence in their institutions? That was post-Watergate. I'm asking the same damn question today. Same question. It's not the other ones are still relevant, but that's an interesting similarity 50 years later.
Which, I mean, one of the topics you wanted to talk about today, maybe this is a good segue into that, of for people who've lost trust in our voting system and our voting institutions, what will it take to gain trust back?
Yeah.
And like, does it take the SAVE Act passing? Like, for people who are, and I'm asking this for some of our listeners who are convinced that our elections are not secure as is. Like, what would it take to gain your trust back? And I think that's the same question we can ask about universities, about the media, about government. Like, it is at like an all-time low as far as ever monitoring or polling people's sentiment towards these inside, like their trust for institutions. But we talk a lot less about like how do you gain that back?
Yeah, because it's hard work. And I think as we look at our country, we have a lot of flaws. We also have a lot of great people on both sides who are willing to do the hard work, heavy lifting, just serious nose to the grindstone work, to use an old cliche. I'm excited about that opportunity. That's what I want to talk about today. There's an interesting story from Green Bay, kind of going to your point specifically. We've talked a lot about election shenanigans and, you know, all these cases have been tried before, but there are real things, and I didn't want to shirk it just because it's not convenient or, you know, some people don't want to acknowledge it. There was an issue in Green Bay. Yeah. Tom Tiffany raised that issue. We'll give you the details. What I think and what Kristen thinks, what it means, I will actually say it proves that elections are secure by the end results. Again, not expecting perfection at the front end, but certainly demanding perfection and honesty, integrity at the back end of our election process. We'll get to that story and more. Point taken, Thursday edition right here on 620 WTMJ. We are first and foremost a news station, and there is news on a story from Green Bay. Tom Tiffany alluded to it when we had him on the show last month. Headline, Green Bay Press Gazette, written by Jesse Lynn. Green Bay clerk likely violated law in April ballot issue report says. Her name is Celestine Jeffries. The Wisconsin Elections Commission said she likely broke state law. She accidentally, and they acknowledge that, mailed duplicate absentee ballots to as many as 152 voters. They got two ballots. instead of one, which is what most people get. That was ahead of the April 7th spring election. A local member of the Republican Party, Teresa Sipes, filed a complaint, perfectly fair and accurate, saying it risked double voting and introduced the possibility of fraud. So Jeffries denied that, and she also, and I think she's right on this, no one double voted. The system, the process, the administration of elections prevented anyone from having two votes cast by the same person. So ultimately, that's the reality of elections that I cling to. To expect perfection in the process is ridiculous. I still think that you compare us to any country in the world, we have one of the most accurate election processes anywhere, despite a myriad of different rules and ways that we vote in, across this country. And the commission, Wisconsin Elections Commission, they even admit it was an accident. And I think the analysis says, which I think is important, that she, Jeffries, appears to have done her duty to prevent any voter from voting more than once. Ultimately, that's
well, then,
that's
and
the
then on top of this, Melinda Eck, if I'm pronouncing her last name right, E-C-K, who is part of the Green Bay City Council, has asked or was requesting an audit.
Yeah.
And is saying this is not an accusation against any individual, but it is also like if this has happened twice where duplicate mail-in votes have, mail-in ballots have been sent out. Like, clearly there's something in the system that needs to be analyzed.
Yeah,
and
which is
changed.
Perfect, yeah. Again, don't expect perfection until you get to the end process, because we know that people vote. It's now we have a myriad of ways, different ways people can vote. And then elections at some point, they're counted and certified. And I am confident, 100% confident in Wisconsin, I'll speak for Wisconsin, that's where I live and vote, that we do it right. And again, any case that's been brought up that tries to show, other than a couple minor cases, and then the numbers are extremely insignificant on people who've actually voted improperly or voted twice in this country, it's infinitesimal. We're doing it right. We are running fair and honest elections, and I think that's the expectation. How do we build trust? Hard work, telling the story, sharing this information with people. So yes, this is a case where someone did something they shouldn't have done by accident. But the process is, both locally in Green Bay and with the Wisconsin Elections Commission, we're catching these things and preventing inaccuracy or fraud in elections. I think this is a positive story. And I hopefully the audit that the council member Melinda Eck is requesting is done and may be helpful for other clerks to figure out how and why this happened, because maybe it's happened somewhere else. We don't want any more reasons for people to doubt elections, because it just makes the whole process untrustworthy. And there's a word that we need to rediscover. It's the word trust. Not only in government, but also in relationships. That's also a big thing.
What do you not trust anymore?
What do I don't trust?
You lost trust or faith in an institution?
I've lost, well, not an institution, but I lost trust in social media. I'm just increasingly dissatisfied. My time on social media is so small now. I don't miss it at all.
Good. I can be the sacrificial lamb, yeah, finding content for us to bring to the show.
I know there's an impact on work product. I understand that, and hopefully my bosses are understanding. It's just it's healthier for my
for sure
my brain. And it's healthy for all your brains too, at least if you believe the science. Quick break.
All right, so the daredevil couple that we ended up it was basically the end of the show, right? The last half hour of our show. From yesterday, that climbed the spire on top of the Empire State Building. They've been arrested. It sounds like there's going to be some federal charges. But apparently they're known for this.
Yeah.
They are a couple that are known for scaling skyscrapers, cranes, and landmarks without ropes or safety equipment. They've built a global following by capturing images that they like, where they take pictures once they're up there. I guess they were in a Netflix documentary called Skywalkers, mm-hmm, a love story, which follows their relationship as they prepare. They were preparing to do some climb. But on top of this, can we pull up the picture, Jazz? Okay, so if you're watching,
oh, there they are. Yeah,
if you're watching the YouTube stream, or if you'd like to watch the YouTube stream to see this picture, 855-616-1620. Text watch to 855-616-1620 to see the picture, especially her. They're gorgeous. They look like models.
Yeah. Fans of Vegas and Cirque du Soleil will understand what I'm saying. They look like every Cirque du Soleil performer I've ever seen.
Okay.
They all look like that. Incredibly fit.
And on top of that, he proposed while he was up there.
That's wild.
And
I was
wondering
why they were kissing up there and doing all the other stuff.
But what I also, and now we have like the newest meme for interwebs as far as people, there's some, you know, one of the photographs that was captured from yesterday where the flag was actually out. Now people are changing the text of what's on that flag and making it into a new meme for people to have fun with for X amount of time.
I'm glad no one got
hurt.
I'm
glad no one's hurt.
They're going to have to pay their fines, but it sounds like they do that anyway because there's a video of her on the Golden Gate Bridge hanging up
there. Doing a similar thing.
Yeah, so I mean, they're clearly, this is their thing. God bless them on their marriage proposal and hope that all works out. You know, risk takers are always fun to watch, and Netflix is really good at highlighting these people. Ultimately, it's about promotion, self-promotion, marketing and stuff, but it was an interesting, fun story and another way to sort of inspire us, not in an illegal way, but to do amazing things in celebration of a great country.
Oh, you're taking it as inspiration?
Yeah. I'm not going to climb anything.
You're in a good mood today.
I am.
Taking the high road.
We had a great podcast yesterday, so that's why I'm in a good mood. Yeah.
We talked about, is that up, Jazz? Yeah, so if you want to, something different than 250, Steve and I talked about men's mental health yesterday on the Overtime
Podcast.
Yeah, you challenged
me, and I said it on the podcast, I'll say it again, it was inspirational as far as making me think about something that I hadn't thought of, and recognizing two individuals, in this case, John Cena and Pete Davidson, who just blew me away with the conversation, and so watch the podcast and then watch their conversation. I think we play some of it. Mm-hmm. We're trying to play some of it on Netflix. It's from, right? It's brilliant. So thanks for that inspirational idea for the podcast. It's if you're fans of us or the show or the podcast, watch it. It's amazing.
His words. All right. We'll be back with Jeremy Janine after this.
11 o'clock on a Thursday means it's time for a full hour of City Stories with Urban Milwaukee President Jeremy Janine on Point Taken.
The last hour before a long weekend. Jeremy Janine, how are you today?
I'm good, and I still have many hours to go.
Oh,
work.
Do you?
Right.
Are you taking tomorrow off?
Half day.
Half day. Okay. All right. Good for you. Good for you. Yeah. When you're your own boss, you really set your own hours, and you are a workaholic if I have ever seen one.
That is, I think, a fair statement.
All right. So we have touched on this multiple times as far as a quote-unquote data center going into the old Walmart at Midtown as part of a bigger development project that includes housing and a library and, you know, things that I think we say that we need, and also a 19,000 square foot data center, which is the size of, I don't know, when you put 19,000 square feet, what is a different landmark that we could say it is similar to?
Well, in this particular case, it's roughly the same size as the library that would go
perfect
into this building.
There you go.
So a general library or a Walgreens is ballpark in that.
So there was a 6-hour meeting about this, you sat through. So congratulations on that.
And I have to confess, I did need to leave the room and go to a T-ball game. So I was watching T-ball and way to go, Aubrey, and listening at the same time and taking notes. And apparently I banned bad handwriting while sitting on a bench watching baseball. But it went on and on and on. It was heated. It was long. And in the end, I don't think it resolved anything.
Okay.
I am now told to expect some news on Monday. I can't say any more than that, although I think we're going to have some movement on this issue. But this is an unusual case, and I think many of the people in the room didn't understand this. I even had a discussion with a commissioner in advance of this. Because this project for the Midtown Center is in what the city calls a development incentive zone, the final decision rests with the City Plan Commission. The idea is you reduce the amount of friction so you don't have to go to the City Plan Commission and to the Common Council. The final people that get to make the decision are not elected, but the PSL members, the socialists that were there, continually, and this is just one of the many absurdities, refer to these plan commissioners as elected officials and that you represent us, and they're not elected.
They're appointed.
They're appointed by the mayor, confirmed by the council. This 160,000 square foot Walmart, there is a key timeline here, key date of July 31st, that the affordable housing component in the parking lots need to break ground. So you need a decision here. But after hours of testimony Monday, you had no decision from the plan commission. You had no guidance on what they wanted to see going forward for any of the sides in this different thing. You have a library going in. You have this self-storage and data center, and then you have this unidentified community use yet.
So can you, so I'm looking at the picture that was published with the article on this, and I'm seeing some of the people who are there who are opposing this. I see one of the signs that says people's needs over developer greed. Can you explain what the people who are kind of leading the charge and trying to block this from happening, what they are opposed to? Is it the entire project? Is it just this one fraction of the data center part? Like, what is their understanding of what this is and what it would mean for the community that they want to block the whole thing?
I suspect Steve is a former mayor, and the right-leaning member of the three of us here is going to have a field day with us, because there was a lot of different things going on. There was one, there just seemed to be concern that it was private property rights, and this person got to decide what they were going to do with their property, that there was an objection to that.
Okay.
There was an objection to, and this person is Trent Overhue, the owner of Affordable Family Storage. There's an objection that he was going to make money on this transaction, which is presumably true of all transactions that come before the government. Right. And then there was a lot of things that the city in advance spent 45 minutes trying to explain, that like the noise ordinance would limit the amount of sound, and we've moved the generators indoors, and we required the developer to do this. Then people got up and spoke and said, well, I don't believe that to be true, and it's going to make lots of noise, and there was no evidence of that.
Well, and we just got someone who texted it and said, refusing to explain who was actually building the data center killed this. Is that true?
I think there was just so much. One, it was really hot in there.
And it
was
also, is it even killed yet?
It's not killed.
Okay.
Trent Overhue did himself no favors, in part because he represented himself. That's very unusual. Usually you'd have an architect there. You might have a lobbyist of some kind that maybe wears a different shirt or had an attorney for you. He had none of that. He represented himself, and he said this could be a biomedical research company coming in, or biomedical, but he would never give examples. He says he has these facilities in other markets in the back of buildings. He claims you'd never know they're there, but he wasn't giving specific examples of where to go to look to verify that. And so the commissioners at the end of the meeting bogged down in trying to send DCD, Department of City Development, on a field trip to Springfield, Missouri, to find an affordable family storage building that apparently has one of these in the back of it. That didn't happen in the end. DCD was like, well, I don't know how we're going to do this.
I chaired plan commission meetings for many years because in Oak Creek, the mayor has that the power. And he didn't help himself, Trent, by not providing clear, direct answers to questions. That's one. Two, there's a political group of people who are just opposed to data centers now. They brand themselves that way, whatever that means. And to the point that you were making about some of the other people who were speaking, there are safeguards in place for, you know, noise. That stuff's in place. But if you're going to come before a group, and I'm supportive of the idea. I want to see things developed in Milwaukee. But you better have clear, direct answers about this stuff. So you're just providing fodder to the opponents. People say things at public meetings to support their own point of view. And if it's a political point of view, they're going to shout that out. They're going to make signs. But ultimately, the plan commission's job is to decide things that push the city forward. And if they can figure out how to do that with the help of this developer, so be it. But you still have to convince people. And ultimately, appointees or elected officials, they have to have confidence that they're getting the right information. If they're not getting that, it's a tough sell.
And I do want to give credit here. Those are all very good points. Department of City Development here deserves a lot of credit. They came to the meeting with 12 conditions they wanted to put on this deal in terms of sound,
they
in terms
prepared.
Of water. I've never seen something that extensive in terms of conditions on an approval. The Plan Commission considered adding more, and then they ended up going, we're just going to hold this, and with no guidance on how they unhold it in the future.
So what's next?
There will be another Plan Commission meeting in July, and it's now July. This happened in late June. We have this critical July 31st timeline for the affordable housing component of the deal. Again, no one seems to be objecting to that aspect of it. I'm expecting news next week, and okay. We'll see what comes from there.
All right.
We've talked data centers and development. Let's go to water, specifically, who wants Milwaukee's water? Where have I heard that before? We'll get to that and more on Point Taken. Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com is where you can find their great work, great reporting on local issues, city and county Milwaukee. This one takes us to Waukesha County and ask to get access to Milwaukee's water, which supplies the city of Waukesha.
So before we go there, I want to go to Family Field on Tuesday night. I had two listeners that I ran into, one of which threw out the first pitch And they wondered how I knew all this stuff. And I said, I sit through 6-hour hearings and I boil them down to 7 minutes.
So did they recognize you by face and they just came up and started talking to you?
Oh, no, they're good radio listeners. They recognized my voice once they started talking.
That's the thing about radio, voice first, then
and
face.
Mark, you had a great joke about your wife. She threw a strike for the first pitch and you said the Brewers have the Miz and now they have the Biz.
Hey!
Oh, very nice.
Did she really? She threw it right down the center?
I did not witness it. So as any journalist, I must just say that that's what the claim was.
Could have been spin. All right, what's the story from Waukesha County?
We have a quietly moving thing in Waukesha County. Steve, as we'll get to in a minute, was very involved for a period in the Waukesha water deal as the mayor of Oak Creek and how that came to be. We now have the city of Pewaukee and the village of Pewaukee together. That's about 24,000 people compared to the roughly 70,000 that live in Waukesha, the city of Waukesha. Those communities have, similar to city of Waukesha, contaminated wells with radium. They also have the challenge in 2029 that they need to regulate PFAS, the forever chemicals that are in both of their wells. So they have two different sources of contamination affecting shallow wells and deep wells. The village of Pewaukee alone knows it just had to raise its water rates by 70% because it knows it has $25 million in expenses just related to maintaining and cleaning up its wells just for the next couple of years. So they both communities retain Strand Associates, an engineering firm, national firm, Third Ward office, to explore, hey, what would it look like to either maintain our groundwater for the next 50 years or to go get Lake Michigan water from somewhere? And at the end of the day, what they're looking at is essentially daisy chaining onto Waukesha's connection with Milwaukee's water.
Is that possible?
It is possible, but it's not going to be cheap. It's for the two communities to connect into Milwaukee's water system. And again, that's via Waukesha. It's going to cost more than $500 million over 50 years.
I wasn't talking about the money side. Yeah, it's very expensive. Is it the compact or the agreement would allow for that?
So that is a very key thing. It is technically possible.
Okay.
Legally, we have a big open question.
That's what I thought.
Waukesha County, that's just a 2008 Great Lakes Compact. Counties that straddle the Great Lakes Basin, any city in those counties is eligible to get Great Lakes water by unanimous vote of the 8 Great Lakes governors. So that's a really high standard to meet.
It's a laborious process, as we know.
Waukesha spent years doing
a lot of money.
They are the only city to ever get approval of this.
That was involved
in any state?
Out of any state, yes.
Wow.
It was incredible. I mean, hands off to Milwaukee. I was involved in the early part because we were the provider before Milwaukee was. They essentially had a better rate than we had, my take. But we certainly had a lot of conversations and I learned a lot about this process. It's a hard road to hoe. It is just a lot of work. So if they can piggyback off that compact agreements, then it's different. But if they have to go to the beginning,
They do have to go to the beginning. They have precedent. They have one of the big unanswered questions here on what they're supposed to be spending. Strand is supposed to be spending 2026 doing is figuring out like the return agreement. So Waukesha has a diversion. They have a 13-mile pipe from Milwaukee to bring them water. They then have a 23-mile pipe to bring it back into the Root River.
Yeah.
Because when you take it out, you have to return a certain percentage of it back. And that's very expensive and complicated. Again, Pewaukee, both the city and village hope to piggyback on Waukesha's ability to return it. That would save them millions of dollars. But does Waukesha have the capacity? That's an open question.
So, and remind me again, what is the actual price comparison of, even though this is technically feasible and what that would cost versus fixing their own water?
They actually, over 50 years, end up being pretty close in cost, except that maintaining your own water just has far more risk to it. Like, an extended drought could imperil their groundwater as well.
Got it.
Already precarious in that area because overdevelopment, let's be honest, and then just good business development all suck that water. And more homes, more people using water resources, businesses, as I said, it becomes a real challenge. And that challenge that City of Waukesha faced is not unique to them, as we're now finding out. So, I mean, it's an incredible story. So where are we in the process right now?
We are very early. The city and village are both doing fact-finding yet. They've had early communications with the DNR. They've had essentially no communication with the city of Milwaukee yet. Now, the city of Milwaukee has capacity for 385 million gallons of water a day. They're currently using about 100 million gallons. There's no more tanneries. Miller Coors is super efficient. Mm-hmm. So Milwaukee has the capacity to support this.
Yeah, they do. They have excess capacity.
both the Pewaukee communities aren't expected to grow a lot in the future just because of their geography. So that's not a big consideration. That was a huge thing with the Waukesha deal of the future growth. And are you subsidizing sprawl with the city of Milwaukee?
A test of the city of Waukesha success is I don't hear anything about it at all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can remember how tense it was. I testified it. Both the state level and local meetings, it was tense and angry and all the things we talked about with other development meetings. It is something that they have to think about. And I credit the folks who are now looking ahead 50 years because they understand, as you said, it's a risk if they don't do this. So that's good leadership.
Yeah, Ben Wood, Strand Associates engineer, made it very clear to both the city and the village boards, doing nothing is not a choice you have.
Absolutely. Also a great topic for our show when Jeremy is even not here. Talking to those folks out in Tony Waukesha. So, okay. All right, lots more to do with Jeremy in this hour. Join us every Thursday from Milwaukee.com. What's your tchotchke shop address for those folks who want to shop?
755 North Milwaukee Street, corner of Milwaukee and Mason. All things Milwaukee and Wisconsin pride. And yes, we have air conditioning.
That's a selling point definitely this week. Quick break.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen, he's Steve, and also Jeremy Janine here on this Thursday. All right, big fire this week, obviously. We haven't talked about it a ton on the show so far, but let us know how it happened. Do we have any more idea of how this even started?
I'm mostly interested in what comes next. Okay. Lincoln Avenue Elementary School, 18th and Lincoln, massive fire, 110 firefighters, 31 units, according to Fire Chief Aaron Lipsky, responded from several communities, 5-alarm fire. If you look at it right now, you can see what looks like a structure there, but there's no floors anymore. They've all collapsed. Lipsky described a situation where firefighters were fighting a fire on one floor and flames came up from underneath them. Obviously, incredibly dangerous. They got out of there. The things I want to note and things I started looking up right away, a lot of our governments are self-insured. I did happen to look through MPS's budget, and it turns out they do insure their buildings specifically. So that is very good news because that means MPS from an insurance provider should be getting a cash payout. There's going to be a lot of discussion in the coming years about school closures. Yeah. So you're like, well, you kind of just closed a school. Maybe you've made some of those decisions easier. Two people in the education sphere quickly reminded me that MPS's problem is primarily on the north side of the city where their school closures are likely to happen. This is a south side school.
Right.
So you might have actually just made that whole problem even harder yet.
Any idea on the student population?
There's about 430 students 2 years ago, according to the last school report card. Yeah. This was a very good performing MPS school. It had a heavily English language learner population. Knowing the south side where it was a heavily Hispanic population.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff. We got another half hour spent with the president, founder, all-time good guy, Jeremy Janine, covering Milwaukee stories for UrbanMilwaukee.com. Great reporting there on all accounts. If you really want to get connected to the city and county of Milwaukee, that's one of your great places to start because they cover everything. And they sit at those meetings, as you told us earlier, 6-plus hours minus a T-ball game.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry. Steve Scafidi is here. We got a half hour left before the long weekend, at least our long weekend. Apparently, Jeremy Janine is still going to work half day tomorrow. Sucker. All right. I was on Brady Street last night, and my husband and I were talking about, there's always conversations around Brady Street and what to do with such a pedestrian heavy area. There's been talks in the past as far as making it pedestrian only. Lots of people saying that's not possible because it is a emergency street thoroughfare. But now there's talks as far as banning parking on Brady Street, and or at least at night. And as someone who walked by as we were leaving Nomad last night and walking to our car, seeing someone who had like a big old liter of vodka, they were just sitting in their car drinking that. And then doing whatever they're going to do. Because that
hopefully not driving.
That was the premise, right? Is that people can't park in their car and then just kind of hang out on the street by their car instead of going into any establishments. Is that the thought behind having a late night parking ban on Brady Street?
We've talked a lot about Water Street in particular with kind of the loitering being the problem. And on Brady Street, a lot of that happens in vehicles right on the street. And not necessarily in vehicles because a lot of it's motorcycles that my friends in particular, some mutual friends we have, Kristen, are particularly annoyed by the motorcycles. They just kind of set up shop on the street in Brady Street. I don't know that they bring their fifths of vodka, but they're they're out there having a party, then they're not necessarily patronizing the businesses, but they're adding to the scene, I guess you would say. The issue came to a head, I think it was last week. There were two different shootings on Brady Street, kind of bookending the street, one at Farwell, one at Van Buren. The one on Van Buren, three people were injured, one died tragically. This parking restriction, though, wouldn't even go as far down as Van Buren. It goes from Humboldt to Farwell. That's the east end of Brady Street. That's where the concentration of bars are. And tonight is the first night of it, Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights. Those are obviously the busy going out to bar nights. We'll see what this does. The concern from some people commenting is, well, you're just going to push the party onto the side streets. I don't necessarily know that that's going to happen.
So I guess what is the measurement of success for this? And who gets to decide if it's a successful initiative?
This is a grand bargain between the Milwaukee Police Department, Area Alderman Alex Brower, the Business Improvement District, and I believe the Brady Street Area Association, which is essentially the neighbors, not the property owners that are involved. They've all been working on this, the six-week, they're calling it a summer safety pilot program. There's a couple other components of it, but they've been working on this even before these two shootings. This was just something that they wanted to really bring to the forefront and do it quickly as a result of what happened last week.
I give them the benefit of the doubt. This is something that, you know, you have to figure this out. And you said it's a trial, right? 6 weeks. See what happens and measure it by police interactions, you know, any civil, you know, disruptions with the way things normally happen on that street, or disruptions for businesses, and then assess after.
And it's also interesting to me, what has been the thing with Brady Street of why they can't put speed humps on that street?
That's coming.
That is coming, finally. Because at first they were saying, they say they couldn't do it because of snowplows, and now that there's speed humps all over the city, it's like, well, what are the snowplows doing everywhere else?
So what's most likely to appear on Brady Street are speed tables, which are the things that you can go over at like 30 miles per hour or 25 miles per hour. That there's
still feels fast on a street with a lot of people walking around.
That is fast.
The stats show there's a huge difference in the scale of injuries and the number of deaths if you get hit by a vehicle at 40 miles per hour versus 30 and then going down 30 to 20. So anytime you can drastically reduce speed, even if you're still having vehicles coming through, that could produce a good long-term outcome.
What are those bumps going into Summerfest parking lot P? What are those called? Those are bad. I bottomed my wife's car out on one of those things.
I'm sure
trust me, she didn't.
Going into Summerfest, I have to confess, I don't drive to Summerfest, so this is my issue.
The Dan Dan's, you're going down the river there. There's business on the right, condos. Then all the Summerfest stuff.
On Erie Street.
Erie Street, that's what it is.
On Erie Street, those, I believe, are traditional speed humps that get you down to 15 miles per hour.
If you're not paying attention, it will bottom out your car. My Jeep would have been fine, but we didn't drive my Jeep that day.
Yeah, so what's likely to come to Brady Street and still remains to be designed and funded on Brady Street is what's on, you can find it on Howell Avenue. There's actually a difficult, probably poor example of this on Center and First Street, where because of the hill, it's got a different pitch. Prospect Avenue has some speed tables.
What's Bayview got? They got those things too.
Well, on Howell, we have speed tables, I go around the corner from that, and I've got three speed humps.
Is it all working? I mean,
it definitely reduces speeds. Okay. So if that's your metric,
All right. So if it's working, let's try it and see what happens on Brady Street.
All right. When we come back, there's a Marty Brooks update. I want to get paid $30,000 a month. How do I get that job? That's what I want to know. Sign me up. All right. Stay with us. Point taken.
Jeremy Janine, president, founder, and great reporter for UrbanMilwaukee.com, joining us as he does every Thursday as we get ready to celebrate the America 250 weekend, long weekend. A Marty Brooks update.
To Kristen's continued humor at my expense about working a half day tomorrow, I'd be willing to work a full day tomorrow and all weekend if I could get this salary that Jimmy Cantor just got.
As someone who already works more than 40 hours a week, I would totally take any of these jobs.
Well, for 30 more hours a week, and you can find the time for $30,000 a month. Now that the Wisconsin Center District has, I mean, he's technically on leave, but they've fired Marty Brooks for cause. He has this 30-day window that goes into sometime next week, I believe, actually, to finally be, not finally, but to be terminated after the 30-day window expires. Longtime board chair of the Wisconsin Center District, Jim Cantor, who is currently the chief commercial officer at Central Standard Craft Distillery, which, if you know anything about Milwaukee's beer and booze industry, Central Standard's undergoing a huge expansion right now into the Harley-Davidson campus. Jim has now got himself a new 30-hour-a-week minimum job as the temporary head of the Wisconsin Center District, which owns the Baird Center, Panther Arena, and Miller High Life Theater.
So two things. One, he's put his time in. He's been, as you said, been on the board. And two, it's the rate they paid Marty Brooks.
It's actually, it's about
slightly more.
That's actually slightly less if he stayed in this job all year.
That's great information. Yeah.
So it'd be $360,000 a year. I don't think anyone expects him to stay in the job.
Marty was getting 410, I think, or something like that.
And it was going to kick up pretty soon to 445.
Yeah.
And that's predominantly taxpayer money that pays their salary.
Yes, the Wisconsin Center District is funded by a combination of taxes. There's a 0.5% sales tax, there's a hotel tax, and a rental car tax.
Yeah.
And then they're earned revenue through renting out the facilities.
Actually, well, you can apply for a job if you'd like it.
A lot of things I could do for $30,000 a month.
Sure.
Just saying.
You don't make that?
I do not.
All right. Where are we going next?
Let's shift gears to scooters.
Scooters!
While we've been on air, this issue has been kind of finalizing itself. I was actually trying to listen during break. There was the tragic incident where the Lacage nightclub owner was hit by a sidewalk riding scooter operator coming out of Old German Beer Hall. So to get your geography right, he was on Martin Luther King Drive near State Street. This individual walked out of the bar like anyone should be able to do, and he was hit by a scooter going 15 miles per hour, what appears to be 15 miles per hour on the sidewalk. I say 15 because that's the speedometer limit on the rentable Lime scooters. The individual, unfortunately, had spinal surgery. Robert Baumann believes he's still in the hospital today. He has several broken bones. The operator of the scooter was cited for a felony. I forget the exact charge, but a serious charge, obviously, the felony charge. But in response, Robert Baumann, who's downtown alderman, always been a skeptic of scooters, said, I don't think we can get our hands around this as a city. Let's just lower the speed limit for all of downtown to 5 miles per hour. Also, the fines for sidewalk riding are between $10 and $20. He proposed raising that to $100 and $200. Now, he acknowledges the real challenge is you need someone to issue the fines, and that's just not happening for MPD. While I was walking over, Alderman Peter Bergella said, why stop at $200? Let's go to $1,000. And then let's also fine the scooter companies themselves. I believe what happened since we've been on air is that proposal was held because there's not a rendering if it's legal and enforceable yet. And then Baumann's proposal about going down to 5 miles per hour, while I was listening during break, they were discussing splitting the baby and going to 10 miles per hour. You'll find out what happened there on Urban Milwaukee or several other outlets later today.
So somebody asked a question on the text line, a couple of people. Insurance requirement, I'm sure the company has some, but you also sign a waiver, right? A digital version of a waiver when you go on these?
As Alderwoman Charlene Moore revealed, she's like, I've taken several scooter rides, and I didn't realize you weren't allowed to ride on the sidewalk until recently.
Yeah, that awareness is a big problem.
Because I just re-signed up for Lime. It's been a while, so I had to re-download the app yesterday because I was going to go to Nomad. I didn't want to deal with parking at Brady Street. So I took it from River West to Brady Street, and it was excellent, right? I took the bike lane. It was a beautiful day. It felt like summer being on the scooter, and it was one of those opportunities where, like, this is a good service to have in the city. But in re-downloading the app, it takes you through how do you park it? Are you allowed to be on the sidewalk? Like, there was all these questionnaires before you even unlock the scooter for the first time that, like, checks your knowledge of what you can and cannot do in a scooter. So
I think this shows how people might just like to box check things and move on. The scooter companies, one thing that came up over and over again, Lime wasn't present at this discussion. Council expressed frustration. DPW said it was our decision, Department of Public Works, to not have them there. They want the issue where Lime can actually fine riders and then collect the money themselves. They want the contract amended too. If Lime fines them, the city wants some share of that money so they can have better skin in the game.
Interesting question also would be, can you, if the term is geofence, the way they limit it, could you actually limit the area between a sidewalk and a street?
So there's attempts to do that. Mark Chambers brought up a specific location because he's a regular scooter rider, where he's like, if I'm going over the Wisconsin Avenue Bridge over the Milwaukee River, it seems to not detect, like, because maybe GPS, and for anyone that knows about our bridge wars 200 years ago, the street bends a little bit there, that it has an issue. There already is one thing we should talk about. There already is several slow zones, like the lakefront is already a 5 mile per hour zone. The area around Fiserv Forum, the quote Deer District, was a 10 mile per hour zone. In response to this crash on MLK Drive, the city extended that by a block within 24 hours, they said. So there's already speed restrictions. Steve, you had a question earlier about if you're going uphill.
Yeah.
It's a speed restriction, not a power of the scooter restriction.
Yeah, the torque going up a hill, I mean, that's pretty amazing technology if they can still make that work.
Yeah.
But boy, that 5 is slow.
It is very slow. If you're following traffic laws, there's probably situations where a pedestrian's going to get in front of you crossing at a stoplight or something.
How fast were you clipping along on your journey yesterday?
I don't know, probably between 10 and 15, depending on, like, there's a fair amount of stoplights that you have to stop and follow the traffic pattern.
Did that feel too fast at any point?
No, I mean, I think, I don't think, I wasn't like flooring it or whatever you call it, because it's a thumb dial. And so yeah. I don't know, like, what you call it. But, so I don't think I was going at, like, maxing out, but it was a comfortable speed.
All right, we'll wrap with Jeremy Janine from UrbanMilwaukee.com after this On Point Taken on 620 WTMJ.
All right, we didn't leave enough time for this, so, definitely want to talk about it more next week as there are going to be more developments, but, an increased ice presence, this last week in Milwaukee?
There's always an ice presence in Milwaukee. They're just by government agency. They're here, but there's now clearly something going on in Mass. There's been at least 39 people arrested. We've seen two of the ordinances as part of the ice out package already be violated. One, I'm very curious about. So the ordinance that the city knew was going to be violated when they passed it was the mask requirement. Mm-hmm. That law enforcement officers don't wear masks except for specific situations. They passed it with an acknowledgement that the federal government has a supremacy clause over any local and state regulations. That one's federal government said, hey, we're not going to abide by that. The interesting one is ICE has been staging, or did at least once, staged in a Milwaukee Police Department parking lot. And the police department appeared to have let them do that until Marina Dmitrievich and some other council members raised an issue. Then the police department said, yeah, we're going to ask them not to do that again going forward. Again, I don't suspect I'm going to see a confrontation between two different law enforcement agencies if ICE insists they're going to do it on police department property, but I'm guessing in the future they will go across the street. But this is really a fast-moving issue that we're going to spend a lot of time on next week, I would imagine.
Yes, he's Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. Check it out. Great reporting on Milwaukee. We'll see you next week. Chris and Steve, we got a podcast to record, America 250. Look for it all over all of our platforms this week, and have a great, safe, and happy 4th. News is next.